Hi, this is Mrs. English, and today I will be reading from Homer's Odyssey, the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Odyssey. I am reading from Book 5. And now Dawn rose from her bed where she lay by haughty Tithonus, carrying light to the immortal gods and to mortals. And the gods came and took their places in session, and among them Zeus, who thunders on high, and it is his power that is greatest, and Athena spoke to them of the many cares of Odysseus, remembering. Though he was in the nymph's house, she still thought of him. Father Zeus, and all other blessed gods everlasting, no longer let one who is a sceptered king be eager to be gentle and kind, be one whose thought is schooled in justice, but let him always rather be harsh and act severely, seeing the way no one of the people he was lord over remembers godlike Odysseus, and he was kind like a father. But now he lies away on an island suffering strong pains in the palace of the nymph Calypso, and she detains him by constraint, line 15. And he cannot make his way to his country, for he has not any ships by him, nor any companions who can convey him back again across the sea's wide ridges. And now there are those who are determined to murder his dear son on his way home. He went in quest of news of his father to Pylos the sacrosanct and to glorious Lake Demon. Then in turn, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, made answer, "My child, what sort of word has escaped your teeth's barrier?" And this, of course, means, "I can't believe you just said that. For is not this your own intention, as you have counseled it, how Odysseus shall make his way back and punish those others? Then bring Telemachus home skillfully, since you can do this, so that all without harm he can come back to his own country, while the suitors in their ship come back with nothing accomplished." He spoke, and then spoke directly to his beloved son Hermes. "Hermes, since for other things also you are our messenger, line 30, announce to the nymph with the lovely hair our absolute purpose, the homecoming of enduring Odysseus." So Hermes' job is to go speak to Calypso, "that he shall come back by the convoy neither of the gods nor of mortal people, but he shall sail on a jointed raft and, suffering hardships on the 20th day, make his landfall on fertile Scheria at the Scheria, at the country of the Phaeacians, who are near the gods in origin, and they will honor him in their hearts as a god, and send him back by ship to the beloved land of his fathers, bestowing bronze and gold in abundance on him, and clothing more than Odysseus could ever have taken away from Troy, even if he had escaped unharmed with his fair share of the plunder. For so it is fated that he shall see his people and come back to his house with the high roof and to the land of his fathers." He spoke, nor disobeyed him the courier Argiophontes, Hermes. Immediately he bound upon his feet the fair sandals, line 45, golden and immortal, that carried him over the water as over the dry boundless earth abreast of the wind's blast. He caught up the staff with which he mazes the eyes of those mortals whose eyes he would maze, or wakes again the sleepers. Holding this in his hands, strong Argiophontes winged his way onward. He stood on Pyrrha and launched himself from the bright air across the sea and sped the wave tops like a shearwater who along the deadly deep waves of the barren salt sea goes hunting fish and sprays quick-beating wings in the salt brine. So Hermes goes over the sea as though he's on a waterboard. In such a likeness, Hermes rode over much tossing water. But after he had made his way to the far-lying island, he stepped then out of the dark blue sea and walked on over the dry land till he came to the great cave where the lovely-haired nymph was at home, and he found that she was inside. There was a great fire blazing on the hearth, and the smell of cedar split in billets, and sweet wood burning spread all over the island. She was singing inside the cave with a sweet voice as she went up and down the loom and wove with a golden shuttle. There was a growth of grove around the cavern, flourishing. Alder was there, and the black poplar, and fragrant cypress, line 65. And, of course, Hermes now is on Calypso's island. Okay, he's going to visit Calypso. And there were birds with spreading wings who make their nests in it, little owls and hawks, and birds of the sea with long beaks who are like ravens, but all their work is on the seawater, and right about the hollow cavern extended a flourishing growth of vine that ripened with grape clusters. Next to it, line 70, there were four fountains, and each of them ran shining water, each next to each, but turned to run in sundry directions, in various directions. And round about there were meadows growing soft with parsley and violets, and even a god who came into that place would have admired what he saw, the heart delighted within him. There the courier Argifontes stood and admired it, but after he had admired it in all his heart, he went to the wide cave, nor did the shining goddess Calypso fail to recognize him when she saw him come into her presence, for the immortal gods are not such as go unrecognized by one another, line 80, not even if one lives in a far home. But Hermes did not find great-hearted Odysseus indoors, but he was sitting out on the beach, crying, as before now he had done, breaking his heart in tears, lamentation, and sorrow, as weeping tears he looked out over the barren water. But Calypso, shining among goddesses, questioned Hermes when she had seated him on a chair that shone and glittered. "How is it, Hermes of the Golden Staff, you've come to me? I honor you and love you, but you have not come much before this. Speak. What's in your mind? My heart is urgent to do it if I can, and if it is a thing that can be accomplished. But come in with me, so I can put entertainment before you." So the goddess spoke, and she set before him a table, which she had filled with ambrosia, and mixed red nectar for him. The courier, Hermes Argifontes, ate and drank then, but when he had dined and satisfied his hunger with eating, then he began to speak, answering what she had asked him. "You, a goddess, ask me, a god, why I came, and therefore I will tell you the whole truth of the tale. It is you who ask me. It was Zeus who told me to come here. I did not wish to." Line 100. "Who would willingly make the run across this endless salt water? And there is no city of men nearby, nor people who offer choice hecatombs to the gods and perform sacrifice. But there is no way for another god to elude the purpose of Aegis-bearing Zeus, or bring it to nothing. He says you have with you the man who is wretched beyond all other men of all those who fought against round the city of Priam for 9 years. And in the 10th, they sacked the city and set sail for home. But on the voyage home, they offended Athena, who let loose an evil tempest and tall waves against them." Line 110. "Then all the rest of his excellent companions perished, but the wind and the current carried him here, and here they drove him. Now Zeus tells you to send him on his way with all speed. It is not appointed for him to die here away from his people. It is still his fate that he shall see his people and come back to his house with the high roof and to the land of his fathers." So he spoke, and Calypso, shining among divinities, shuddered and answered him in winged words and addressed him. "And remember, Hermes came to this remote island. He doesn't want to come here. He has had to, board across the water and surfboard across the water. And he found Calypso singing. She's very, very happy, singing in her cave. Odysseus sits out on the beach, weeping. So she speaks to him. "You are hard-hearted, you gods, and jealous beyond all creatures besides, when you are resentful toward the goddess for sleeping openly with such men as each has made her true husband. So when Dawn of the Rosy Fingers chose out Orion, all you gods who live at your ease were full of resentment, until chaste Artemis of the Golden Throne in Ortygia came with a visitation of painful arrows and killed him. And so it was when Demeter of the lovely hair, yielding to her desire, lay down with Jason, and loved him in a thrice-turned field. It was not long before this was made known to Zeus, who struck him down with a cast of the shining thunderbolt. So now, you gods, you resent it in me, that I keep beside me a man, that the one I saved when he clung astride of the keelboard all alone, since Zeus, with a cast of the shining thunderbolt, had shattered his fast ship midway on the wine-blue water, then all the rest of his excellent companions perished. But the wind and the current carried him here, and here they drove him. And I gave him my love, and cherished him. And I had hopes also that I could make him immortal, and all his days to be endless. But since there is no way for another god to elude the purpose of Aegis-bearing Zeus, or bring it to nothing, let him go, let him go. If he himself is asking for this and desires it, out on the barren sea, line 140, But I will not give him conveyance, for I have not any ships by me, nor any companions who can convey him back across the sea's wide ridges. But I will freely give him my counsel, and hold back nothing, so that all without harm he can come back to his own country. Line 145. Then in turn the courier Argiophontes answered her, Then send him accordingly on his way, and beware of the anger of Zeus, lest he hold a grudge hereafter, and rage against you. So spoke powerful Argiophontes, and there he left her, while she, the queenly nymph, when she had been given the message from Zeus, set out searching after great-hearted Odysseus, and found him sitting on the seashore, and his eyes were never wiped dry of tears, and the sweet lifetime was draining out of him. Okay, he was getting old, and he wept for a way home, since the nymph was no longer pleasing to him. By nights he would lie beside her of necessity in the hollow caverns against his will by one who was willing. But all the days he would sit upon the rocks at the seaside, breaking his heart in tears and lamentation and sorrow, as weeping tears he looked out over the barren water. She, bright among divinities, stood near and spoke to him. Line 160. Poor man! No longer mourn here beside me, nor let your lifetime fade away, since now I will send you on with a good will. So come, cut long timbers with a bronze axe, and join them to make a wide raft, and fashion decks that will be on the upper side to carry you over the misty face of the water. Then I will store aboard her bread and water and ruddy wine, strength-giving goods that will keep the hunger from you, and put clothing on you, and send a following stern wind after, so that all without harm you can come back to your own country, if only the gods consent. It is they who hold wide heaven, and they are more powerful than I to devise and accomplish. Line 170. So she spoke to him, but long-suffering great Odysseus shuddered to hear, and spoke again in turn and addressed her. Here is some other thing you devise, O goddess. It is not conveyance when you tell me to cross the sea's great open space on a raft. That's dangerous and hard. Not even balanced ships rejoicing in a wind from Zeus cross over. I will not go aboard any raft without your good will, nor unless, goddess, you can bring yourself to swear me a great oath that this is not some painful trial you're planning against me. Okay, it's not a trick. So he spoke, line 180, and Calypso, shining among divinities, smiled and stroked him with her hand and spoke to him and named him. You are so naughty, and you will have your way in all things. See how you've spoken to me and reason with me. Earth be my witness in this, and the wide heaven above us, and the dripping water of the Styx, which oath is the biggest and most formidable oath among the blessed immortals, that this is no other painful trial I am planning against you, but I'm thinking and planning for you, just as I would do it for my own self, if such needs as yours were to come upon me, for the mind in me is reasonable, and I have no spirit of iron inside my heart. Rather, it is compassionate. So she spoke, a shining goddess, and led the way swiftly, and the man followed behind her, walking in the god's footsteps. They made their way, the man and the god, to the hollow cavern, line 195, and he seated himself upon the chair from which Hermes lately had risen, while the nymph set all manner of food before him to eat and drink, such things as mortal people feed on. She herself sat across from the table from godlike Odysseus, and her serving maids set nectar and ambrosia before her. They put their hands, line 200, to the good things that lay ready before them, but after they had taken their pleasure in eating and drinking, the talking was begun by the shining goddess Calypso. Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, are you still all so eager to go on back to your own house in the land of your fathers? I wish you well, however you do it, but if you only knew in your own heart how many hardships you were fated to undergo before getting back to your country, you would stay here with me, and be the lord of this household, and be an immortal, for all your longing once more to look on that wife for whom you're pining all your days here, and yet I think that I can claim that I'm not her inferior, either in build or stature, since it's not likely that mortal women can challenge the goddesses for build and beauty. Then resourceful Odysseus, thank goodness he knows what to say, spoke in turn and answered her, line 215, Goddess and queen, do not be angry with me. I myself know that all you say is true, and that circumspect Penelope can never match the impression you make for beauty and stature. She is mortal after all, and you are immortal and ageless. But even so, what I want and all my days I pine for is to go back to my house and see my day of homecoming. And if some god batters me far out on the wine blue water, I will endure it, keeping a stubborn spirit inside me, for already I've suffered much and done much hard work on the waves and in the fighting. So let this adventure follow. Line 225. So he spoke, and the sun went down, and the darkness came over. These two, withdrawn in the inner recess of the hallowed cavern, enjoyed themselves in love and stayed all night by each other. Apparently he doesn't miss Penelope that much. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, Odysseus wrapped himself in an outer cloak and a tunic, while she, the nymph, mantled herself in a gleaming white robe, fine woven and delightful, and around her waist she fastened a handsome belt of gold, and on her head was a wimple. She set about planning the journey for great-hearted Odysseus. She gave him a great axe that was fitted to his palms and headed with bronze, and a double edge each way, and fitted inside it a very beautiful handle of olive wood, well hafted. Then she gave him a well-finished adze, and led the way onward to the far end of the island, where there were trees, tall-grown, alder and black poplar and fir that towered to the heaven, but all gone dry long ago and dead, line 240, so they would float lightly. But when she had shown him where the tall trees grow, Calypso, shining among divinities, went back to her own house, while he turned to cutting his timbers, and quickly had his work finished. He threw down 20 in all, and trimmed them well with his bronze axe, and planed them expertly, line 245, and trued them straight to a chalk line. Calypso, the shining goddess, at that time came back, bringing him an auger, and he bored through them all, and pinned them together with dowels, and then with cords he lashed his raft together. And as great as is the bottom of a broad cargo-carrying ship, when a man well skilled in carpentry fashions it, such was the size of the broad raft made for himself by Odysseus. Next, setting up the deck boards and fitting them to close uprights, he worked them on, and closed in the ends with sweeping gunwales. Then he fashioned the mast with an upper deck fitted to it, and made in addition a steering oar by which to direct her, and fenced her in down the whole length with wattles of osier to keep the water out, and expended much timber upon this. Next, Calypso, the shining goddess, brought out the sailcloth to make the sails with, and he carefully worked these also, and attached the straps, line 260, and halyards and sheets all in place aboard her, and then with levers worked her down to the bright salt water. It was the fourth day, and all of his work was finished. Then on the fifth day, shining Calypso saw him off from the island, when she had bathed him and put fragrant clothing upon him. And the goddess put two skins aboard, one filled with dark wine, and the other, the big one, filled with water, and put on provisions in a bag, and stored there many good things to keep a man's strength up, and sent a following wind to carry him. Warm and easy, glorious Odysseus, happy with the wind, spread sails, line 270, and taking his seat artfully with the steering oar, he held her on her course, nor did sleep ever descend on his eyelids as he kept his eye on the Pleiades and late-setting Boetes. I'm probably slaughtering these pronunciations. These are star constellations. And the bear, to whom men give also the name of the wagon, who turns about in a fixed place and looks at Orion, and she alone is never plunged in a wash of the ocean. For so Calypso, bright among goddesses, had told him to make his way over the sea, keeping the bear on his left hand. 17 days he sailed, making his way over the water, and on the 18th day there showed the shadowy mountains of the Phaeacian land where it stood out nearest to him, and it looked like a shield lying on the misty face of the water. Coming back from the Ethiopians, the strong earth-shaker, so Poseidon has been away in Ethiopia, and now he's returning, the strong earth-shaker saw him from afar on the mountains of the Selimoi. He was visible sailing over the sea. Poseidon was the more angered with him, and shook his head and spoke to his own spirit, "For shame, Surely the gods have rashly changed their intentions about Odysseus while I was away in the Ethiopian's land, and near the Phaeacian country, where it is appointed that he shall escape this great trial of misery that is now his. Line 290. But I think I can still give him a good full portion of trouble. He spoke, and pulled the clouds together in both hands, gripping the trident, and staggering the sea, and let loose all the storm blasts of all the winds together, and huddled under the cloud scuds, land alike and the great water. Night sprang from heaven. East wind and south wind clashed together, and the bitter-blown west wind and the north wind bore. In the bright air rolled up a heavy sea. The knees of Odysseus gave way for fear, and the heart inside him, and deeply troubled, he spoke to his own great-hearted spirit, "Ah me, unhappy, what in the long outcome will befall me?" Line 300. I fear the goddess might have spoken the truth in all ways when she said that on the sea, and before I came to my country, I would go through hardships. Now all this is being accomplished, and such clouds are these, with which Zeus is cramming the wide sky and has staggered the sea, and storm blasts of wind from every direction are crowding in. My sheer destruction is certain. 3 times and 4 times happy those Danaans were who died then in wide Troyland, bringing favor to the sons of Atreus, as I wish I too had died at that time and met my destiny on the day when the greatest number of Trojans threw their bronze-headed weapons upon me over the body of perished Achilles. So now we are hearing about Achilles after his death. This is at Troy. Achilles is dead, and Odysseus tells us that the Trojans threw their bronze-headed weapons upon me over the body of perished Achilles. Of course, he's trying to protect the body. And I would have had my rights, and the Achaeans given me glory. If only he had died then, when so many died, he would have had his rights, and he would have glory. And of course, to be killed at sea is very inglorious, and your bones will be lost. Now it is by dismal death that I must be taken. As he spoke so, a great wave drove down from above him with a horrible rush, and spun the raft in a circle, and he was thrown clear far from the raft, and let the steering oar slip from his hands. A terrible gust of storm winds, whirling together and blowing, snapped the masttree off in the middle, and the sail and the upper deck were thrown far and fell in the water. He himself was ducked for a long time, nor was he able to come up quickly from under the great rush of the water, for the clothing which divine Calypso had given him weighted him down. At last he got to the surface and spat the bitter salt sea water that drained from his head, which was filled with it. But he did not forget about his raft for all his trouble, but turned, line 325, and swam back through the waves, and laid hold of it, and huddled down in the middle of it, avoiding death's end. Then the waves tossed her about, the current now here, now there, as the north wind in autumn tumbles and tosses thistle down along the plain, and the bunches hold fast on one another. So the winds tossed her on the great sea, now here, now there, and now it would be south wind and north that pushed her between them, and then again east wind and west would burst in and follow. The daughter of Cadmus, sweet stepping Io, called Leucothea, saw him. She had once been one who spoke as a mortal, but now in the gulfs of the sea she holds degree as a goddess. She took pity on Odysseus as he drifted and suffered hardship, and likening herself to a winged gannet, she came up out of the water and perched on the raft and spoke a word to him. "Poor man, why is Poseidon the shaker of the earth so bitterly cankered against you, to give you such a harvest of evils?" Line 340. "And yet he will not do away with you for all his anger, but do as I say, since you seem to me not lacking in good sense. Take off these clothes, and leave the raft, and drift at the wind's will, and then strike out and swim with your hands, and make for a landfall on the Phaeacian country, where your escape is destined. And here, take this veil. It is immortal, and fasten it under your chest, and there is no need for you to die, nor to suffer. But when with both your hands you have taken hold of the mainland, untie the veil and throw it out in the wine-blue water far from the land, and turn your face away as you do so." So spoke the goddess, and handed him the veil. Then herself, in the likeness of a gannet, slipped back into the heaving sea, and the dark, tossing water closed about her. And now long-suffering great Odysseus pondered 2 courses. 9355. And troubled, he spoke then to his own great-hearted spirit. "Ah me, which of the immortals is weaving deception against me, and tells me to put off from the raft. But no, I will not do it yet, since I have seen with my own eyes that the shore, where she said I could escape, is still far from me. But here is what I will do, and this seems to me the best way. As long as the timbers hold together and the construction remains, I will stay with it and endure through suffering hardships. But once the heaving sea has shaken my raft to pieces, then I will swim. There is nothing better that I can think of. Line 365. Now, as he was pondering these ways in his heart and spirit, Poseidon, shaker of the earth, drove on a great wave that was terrible and rough, and it curled over and broke down upon him, and, as when the wind blows hard on a dry pile of chaff and scatters it abroad in every direction, so the raft's long timbers were scattered. But now Odysseus sat astride one beam, like a man riding on horseback, and stripped off the clothing which the divine Calypso had given him, and rapidly tied the veil of Ino around his chest, then threw himself head first into the water, and with his arms spread stroked as hard as he could. The strong earth-shaker saw him swimming, and shook his head, and spoke to his own spirit, "There now, drift on the open sea, suffering much trouble, until you come among certain people who are the gods' fosterlings. Even so, I hope you will not complain that I stinted your hardships." Line 380. So he spoke, and laid the lash on his fair-maned horses, and made to his way to Aegae, where he has his fabulous palace. But now Athena, daughter of Zeus, planned what was to follow. She fastened down the courses of all the rest of the storm winds, and told them all to go to sleep now and to give over, but stirred a hastening north wind, and broke down the seas before him, until Zeus sprung Odysseus, escaping death, and the spirits of death might join the company of oar-loving Phaeacians. Then he was driven 2 nights and 2 days on the heavy seas, and many times his heart foresaw destruction. So 2 nights and 2 days, Odysseus is riding a log like a horse here, naked. Line 390. But when dawn with the lovely hair had brought the third morning, then at last the gale went down, and windless weather came on, and now he saw the land lying very close to him as he took a sharp look, lifted high on the top of a great wave, and as welcome as the show of life again and a father is to his children when he is lain sick, suffering strong pains and wasting long away, and the hateful death spirit has brushed him, but then, and it is welcome, gods set him free of his sickness. So welcomed appeared land and forest now to Odysseus, and he swam, pressing on so as to set foot on the mainland. But when he was far away, as a voice can carry, he heard the thumping of the sea on the jagged rock teeth, for a big surf, terribly sucked up from the main, was crashing on the dry land. All was mantled in salt spray, and there were no harbors to hold ships, no roadsteads for them to ride in, but promontories, line 405, outthrust, and ragged rock teeth and boulders. The knees of Odysseus gave way for fear, and the heart inside him, and deeply troubled, he spoke to his own great-hearted spirit. "Ah, me! Now that Zeus has granted a sight of unhoped-for land, and now I've made across the crossing of this great distance, I see no way for me to get out of the gray sea water, for on the other side, outer side, are sharp rocks, and the surf about them breaks and roars, and the sheer of the cliff runs up above them, and the sea is deep close in shore, so that there's no place to stand, bracing on both my feet, and so avoid trouble." Line 415. "I fear that as I climb out, a great wave will catch and throw me against the stormy cliff. That will be a pitiful landing. Yet, if I try to swim on along in the hope of finding beaches that slant against the waves or harbors for shelter from the sea, I fear that once again the whirlwind will snatch me and carry me out to sea where the fish swarm, groaning heavily, or else the divinity from the deep, Poseidon, will let loose against me a sea monster of whom Amphitrite keeps so many, Poseidon's wife, for I know how bitterly the renowned earth-shaker hates me." Now, as he was pondering this in his heart and spirit, line 425, meanwhile a great wave carried him against the rough rock face, and there his skin would have been taken off, his bones crushed together, had not the gray-eyed goddess Athena sent him an inkling, and he frantically caught hold with both hands on the rock face and clung to it, groaning until the great wave went over. This one he so escaped, but the backwash of the same wave caught him where he clung and threw him far out in the open water. As when an octopus is dragged away from its shelter, the thickly clustered pebbles stick in the cups of the tentacles, so in contact with the rock, The skin from his bold hands was torn away. Now the great sea covered him over, and Odysseus would have perished, wretched beyond his destiny, had not the gray-eyed goddess Athena given him forethought. He got clear of the surf, where it sucks against the land, and swam on along, looking always toward the shore, in hope of finding beaches that slanted against the waves, or harbors for shelter from the sea. But when he came swimming along to the mouth of a sweet-running river, this at last seemed to him the best place, being bare of rocks, and there was even shelter from the wind there. He saw where the river came out, and prayed to him in his spirit. Line 445. So he's talking to the god, the river god. Hear me, my lord, whoever you are. I come in great need to you, a fugitive from the sea and the curse of Poseidon. Even for a murder gods, that man has a claim on their mercy who comes to them as a wandering man, in the way that I now come to your current, and to your knees after much suffering. So he's supplicating. Pity me then, lord. I call myself your suppliant. He spoke, and the river stayed his current, stopped the waves breaking, and made all quiet in front of him, and let him get in safely into the outlet of the river. Now he flexed both knees and his ponderous hands. His very heart was sick with salt water, and all his flesh, line 455, was swollen, and the sea water crusted stiffly in his mouth and nostrils, and with a terrible weariness fallen upon him, he lay unable to breathe or speak in his weakness. But when he got his breath back, and the spirit regathered into his heart, he at last unbound the veil of the goddess from him, and let it go, to drift in the seaward course of the river, and the great wave carried it out on the current, and presently Ino took it back into her hands. Odysseus staggered from the river and lay down again in the rushes and kissed the grain-giving soil. Then, deeply troubled, he spoke to his own great-hearted spirit. What will happen now, line 465, and what in the long outcome will befall me? For if I wait out the uncomfortable night by the river, I fear that the female dew and the evil frost together will be too much for my damaged strength. I am so exhausted, and in the morning a chilly wind will blow from the river. But if I go up the slope and into the shadowy forest, and lie down to sleep among the dense bushes, even if the chill and weariness let me be, and a sweet sleep comes upon me, I fear I may become spoil and prey to the wild animals. In the division of his heart, this last way seemed best, line 475, and when he went to look for the wood, and found it close to the water in a conspicuous place, and stopped underneath two bushes that grew from the same place, one of shrub and one of wild olive, and neither the force of wet blowing winds could penetrate these, nor could the shining sun ever strike through with his rays, nor yet could the rain pass all the way through them, so close together were they grown, interlacing each other, and under these now Odysseus entered, and with his own hands heaped him a bed to sleep on, making it wide, since there was a great store of fallen leaves there, enough for two men to take cover in, or even three men in the winter season, even in the very worst kind of weather. Seeing this, long-suffering great Odysseus was happy, and lay down in the middle, and made a pile of leaves over him, as when a man buries a burning log in a black ash heap in a remote place in the country, where none live near his neighbors, and saves the seed of fire, having no other place to get a light from. So Odysseus buried himself in the leaves, line 491, and Athena shed a sleep on his eyes, so as most quickly to quit him, by veiling his eyes, from the exhaustion of his hard labors. And there ends book 5.